This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 182 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We had a bit of a non-snowmageddon here today, Max. How about you?
Yeah, it all came this way. We're all shoveling a lot of snow up here in New England. A little bit sore from that, but we'll soldier on.
I guess we should talk about drones. Isn't that why we're here? We got a lot to talk about from the Super Bowl. We're not in Kansas anymore. Local news, sports, traffic, and weather done by UAS. Optionally expendable drones. I like that phrase. Optionally expendable drones. Making it rain. Drones becoming pollinating worker bees. And a video of the catch of the week. So I guess we should get started. What do you think, Max?
Let's get started.
Well, if you don't know this week, that team won the Super Bowl, but that really wasn't the biggest news. The biggest news was the halftime show, and Lady Gaga did an excellent job, but the 300 drones that occurred behind her to start off with got all of the attention, it seems like, huh? The Super Bowl had drones doing tricks.
That's right. Now, these were the Intel drones, the same ones that we talked about previously, the world record that they had set. And I think in this case, there were 300 of them choreographed by Intel. They performed some sort of kind of background images, graphics, shapes in the sky. Now, interestingly enough, and, you know, a lot of people didn't realize this, and I think many still don't, is that the drone part of it wasn't live.
Was pre-recorded.
Pre-recorded. And for reasons I think that it'll be clear to all of us, that being that they didn't want to run drones over people, and there was also the TFR in effect around the stadium. The event was a no drone zone, so they were filmed. They still performed as you see them. It's just a little bit of a tape delay there, maybe,
which was fine. And if you go back and watch the halftime show, at least the beginning part with the UAVs, you then can really tell the cutaway when Lady Gaga jumps off the top of the building. But that being said, it was still pretty phenomenal. And of course, the reason why we all watched the Super Bowl is the commercials. And one of Amazon's commercials was a lovely lady sitting next to her significant other who was licking his fingers and going back into the Cheetos bag, and she asked for Amazon's box to deliver more Cheetos or cheese curls.
Doritos, I think it was.
Oh, it was Doritos. Okay. And guess what? Guess how it gets arrived?
Amazon Prime
drone. Yeah. So it was, the Super Bowls were definitely for the droniacs this year.
You know, David, I think it's significant in that, drones have made the big time. I mean, if they show up on the Super Bowl like they did this year, that kind of demonstrates really pretty clearly, I think, that we've come a real, real long way from where we started, where when most people heard the word drone, they thought of military drones attacking people.
And drone conventions with the internet password, do not use the word drone. We've come a long way, Max, and I think you and I can single-handedly say that it was all because of us. But it really was, and I think basically the whole industry took it as wow, we've become mainstream, you know, yes. And the corner has been turned, and now we can move forward. And Intel did a really good job. It was a really nice presentation. Amazon was subtle about it, but it was still noted. So I think it's really cool. I really would like to see that drone demonstration by Intel in person, because that looked really, really neat. And they're just little quadcopters with lights on them, but it is really neat technology.
An interesting thing, too, I think, David, is that the Bloomberg article that we'll have a link to in the show notes really talks about drones in a much larger context. They talk about the different kinds of applications that are possible for drones. They talk about what's going on from the regulatory standpoint and all that. And I think it's, well, first of all, it's all material that all of us listening here, participating in this podcast, are familiar with. There's really not anything new to us in that. But when you have a publication like Bloomberg going into that level of detail, describing drones, describing unmanned aircraft, and sort of raising the general awareness even more than we've seen in the past, I think that's another sign that things have really turned the corner. And this is something I think that's going to really help people envision the scope of what we're looking at when we're talking about drones. So I thought it was a good article from Bloomberg.
It's just unfortunate the wrong team won, but there's always next year. Oh, but and the other part about it, there's one small story, and I forget where it was, but you know, the Falcons the day before the game were being spied on by a quadcopter over their practice field.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one.
The Pats have cheated in the past. Who knows how, what kind of detail, you know? Oh, they cheated against my beloved Eagles, so we'll talk. But let's move on to the center of the United States and Kansas. And Kansas has a UAS director, and they outlined some initial drone plans. The Kansas Department of Transportation, or DOT, has an unmanned systems director, Bob Brock, and he wants the state to be the leader in UAS technology.
Yes, and he's talked about some of the objectives, some of the things that he'd like to achieve. And it starts out with a desire to protect privacy and maintain public safety with regard to unmanned aircraft. So that's good. That's sort of the baseline. That's sort of what you want anybody in a position like that to kind of start with. But he also says that he wants to, quote, deliver systems that make Kansas safer, provide economic growth, and also save time and money, which is good. There's also groups of Kansas residents that he really wants to help particularly.
And we're back to precision agriculture again, which is farmers and ranchers, to help adopt UAS technology, reduce costs, increase yields. We don't really go an episode without talking about precision agriculture, do we, Max?
It seems that way.
I mean, and Kansas is the heart of the Midwest, and I don't know, what is Kansas known for? Wheat? Corn?
Beef?
Beef? Well, beef. I mean, ranching is a big deal, you know, and how do you survey a herd of cattle? Well, a drone would be a great way to do it, as long as you kind of find a way not to disturb the cattle.
Brock also notes that they don't intend to do this in a vacuum, that they are teaming up with other departments in the state of Kansas, as well as universities and the FAA. And Brock comes from a great background for this job, I think.
An Air Force career that included UAS operations and training. So he knows the subject matter. You know, and $80,000 a year wouldn't be bad either. You know, Max?
Yeah, that seems like a nice little sum. I know there was a little bit of flack over the level of salary when he started, which was last year. But, you know, when you look at the importance of a state such as Kansas developing good policy towards unmanned aircraft and you know, using them in ways that benefit the state and the residents of the state and the businesses of the state, it's really kind of a modest sum, I think.
And you get what you pay for. But I like the tone and the tenor he's taking, that it's a discussion between the universities and the technology companies and the FAA, as well as, you know, right now we have a lot of states approving their own laws that may go directly against the Federal Aviation Administration. But it's a great tenor that the state is taking it and looking at the technology and reaching out to it, unlike some of us other states that we live in, like the one I do, where we would just think in backwards technology. So good for Kansas.
Yeah.
And let's talk about Birmingham, Alabama. WBRC, their Fox affiliate, is the first to use drones for news, weather, and traffic coverage. They call it Sky Tracker.
That's right. And they have two licensed drone pilots. One of them is the meteorologist, who also happens to be an aircraft pilot and is also a licensed drone pilot. And their operations manager is also a licensed drone pilot. And they want to use drones for weather coverage, the various types of news gathering activities, traffic. They also say they have some marketing and creative services they're looking at. Not sure what those are exactly. Tower inspections, I imagine that's for their towers, and some sales initiatives. In the photos, David, this looks to me like it's a DJI Inspire 2. And they note that they can broadcast live from that drone. So that looks like a pretty nice little tool for a news organization.
Yeah, I know our local ABC affiliate has had a Drone 6 that they've tentatively used a little bit of, but nothing to the extent of traffic. I wonder how the traffic is in Birmingham, because I don't know if you could actually use a drone for traffic here in a major city like us in the megalopolis that's DC, Philadelphia, New York, Hartford, Boston. So where we have lots and lots, or let's just say the capital of all really bad traffic, Los Angeles. I mean, how many Intel drones will it take to cover the interstates in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we see some news organizations have helicopters they use for reporting on traffic, and that's because they need to cover a lot of territory, sometimes even fixed-wing aircraft. In the case of using a drone for traffic reporting, I don't know, it seems like you could use a quadcopter, a multi-rotor to look at a particular location, but it doesn't seem like it's the right kind of craft for traveling about the area. You might want a fixed wing, but it'll be interesting to see how they apply this. When they talk about the first to use in this story, well, the first is kind of broad. It means the first in Birmingham, Alabama, but also the first station in the Raycom Media Group. Now, this particular station is part of that media group, and overall, they own or operate, they say, 62 television stations in 20 states. So it's an idea to use a drone in this way. It's more than just an independent local station. It's part of this media group that covers a lot of stations. So I imagine that if they show that they can use this drone successfully in a news gathering context, that many other of the television stations in that group will probably also follow suit.
We'll have to follow up and see what happens with them. So let's talk about my new favorite phrase, optionally expendable air combat drones. I like that, optionally expendable. I wish some of my coworkers at work were optionally expendable.
Rough day at the office, huh?
Oh, I can dream. The KUSD, or the Kratos Unmanned System Division, is developing the XQ-222 Unmanned Combat Vehicle, or UCAV. And it's a part of the low-cost attributable, oh, God, this is why we have an acronym, low-cost attributable Strike Command Aerial System UAS, or LCASD initiative. We want strike things, but we don't want to necessarily need them to come back, right?
Yeah. Now, these are not small drones, right? We've looked at expendable drones last episode.
Week.
Yes. And those are of a small variety. These are much larger and with much greater range and payload capability. The United States Air Force has stated some goals for this particular program. And to give you an idea, they're talking about vehicles that have a 1,500 nautical mile mission radius and that can carry a 500-pound payload. So that's pretty significant.
You can read into that 500-pound bomb.
Yes, yeah, basically. And so I think the idea here, David, is that in some cases you'll want the drone to come back, but there could be other missions where, you know, you really don't want that to be the case. That's the expendable part of this idea.
Some missions should be one-way trips and be done with it. Okay, the word kamikaze comes to mind, which means the drone actually becomes the weapon system. The example they give is it could strike North Korea and recover back in South Korea or Japan from Guam, or it could go to North Korea and never come back, and it really wouldn't be a complete loss. You're using an unmanned aircraft, so you're using high-risk targets that you don't really want to risk sending in a multi-million dollar trained pilot for political reasons and or moral reasons. So you can use the unmanned expendable aircraft. Part of this is the way the Air Force is going and the Pentagon is, what can we use that becomes a COT or a commercial off-the-shelf product? You know, using technologies that are readily available. So you're not reinventing the wheel. Did you ever have that kind of discussions when you were back in your old days as an engineer, Max, not reinventing the wheel?
Oh, of course. And it does come down to cost. And the one of the program objectives here is low acquisition costs. Although these numbers might sound a little large to some people, but they're looking at an acquisition cost target of $3 million or less for up to the first 99 units, and then a $2 million or less cost for 100 or more units, which sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but it's a lot less money than other options that might be used to deploy for these kinds of missions.
Include development costs.
And include in development costs, exactly. So it's a way for the military, I think, to look at achieving the same kinds of mission success, but at a lower cost.
Exactly. And development costs are where a lot of these programs get hurt. You know, you spend lots and lots of money developing things, and then you only decide to purchase 20 of them, i.e. B-2, you end up getting a $1 billion price tag. Whereas if you had bought the original estimated 120, they wouldn't have been so expensive. So in this case, the government's trying to do the best they can with off-the-shelf components. So we'll have to follow up on that and see what happens. I mean, there's a lot of drone technology out there now that the Air Force can reap from. So let's talk about other things raining down, like seeding clouds.
The water kinds of stuff raining down. Yeah, Nevada officials are looking at cloud seeding And in fact, the Nevada Institute for Autonomous Systems, last year in 2016, they tested a cloud seeding payload that was flown by a fixed-wing drone. And when they did that, they got a lot of response from really all over the world, different places, different organizations, different countries that were interested in using a technology of like a technology like that to seed clouds, or in other words, to get it to rain. In Nevada, they are continuing to take a look at this and develop the concepts.
Chris Wallace, the Director of Operations for Unmanned Aviation at the Nevada Institute of Autonomous Systems, said, quote, "I think that will be history-making. At least it's going to extend cloud seeding further than anyone's ever imagined." Cloud seeding seems to be around a lot, and unfortunately, it sort of gets mixed up with that lovely term that us av geeks try to avoid, which is...
Thinking of chemtrails, David?
I'm thinking of... I mentally blocked that out, folks. But yeah, chemtrails. But cloud seeding has been around, I know, since at least in the military, since the Vietnam War, they did some tests like that. And it's a way to try to prevent droughts.
Yeah, so this is another drones for good kind of example, I think. Bringing water to rain to arid areas that need it. But that's not the only kind of drones for good story we're looking at here.
Yeah, this is one of those sort of meta articles. It's drones acting like bees or acting like worker bees for the coming bee apocalypse. This was from Gizmodo. And scientists are building pollinator drones. Bees seem to be disappearing out from the planet. And without bees, we don't get honey. Without bees, we don't get cross-pollination. So you don't get oranges and apples and flowers and roses. They're a huge part of thing. Well, the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science and Technology in Japan have developed sort of micro drones that can act as bees to cross-pollinate flowers.
So this is really kind of in the early stages. And what they have done is they discovered some kind of a sticky substance that they actually had around the labs, I guess, that they found was good at picking up little pieces of pollen. And so they tried something. They took some animal hair, actually, glued it to the bottom of these tiny little G-Force PXY cam drones. Maybe they call them Pixie cam drones. And then they put this sticky, gooey stuff on the little hair on the bottom.
Cilia. Why don't you say cilia?
Cilia sounds better than hair. Animal hair. They flew this little drone around some flowers, and they found that by just knocking into the flowers, that the drone would pick up and then deposit little pollen grains. Now, like I say, this is really kind of preliminary, and this is this is not close to creating a capability that can that can compete with bees or that can provide the same kinds of levels of pollination as bees, but it's a fascinating kind of technology that really may ultimately become something that's very important.
And it's just sort of cool that the drones are becoming bees. It's very meta, folks. It's very meta. But really a cool drones for good story to finish up our stories. But I guess that leads us to the catch of the week or the video of the week.
That's right. This is DARPA demonstrates sidearm UAS capture system. When I first saw this, I thought this was going to be another device for capturing or grabbing rogue drones. But that's not what this is at all, is it?
This is a recovery system.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, it's a recovery system that they did back in the 40s. Believe it or not, there was an LST, which is a landing ship, that had pretty much the same system for launching and recovering small liaison aircraft like Piper Cubs. And they actually tested it. And basically, this ARM system is a reinvention of old technology. But right now, a lot of times, especially in the Navy, when they recover a drone, they fly it into a net. The problem with that is sometimes that crash into the net damages the drone. In this case, they're trying to simplify it and have a arm with an arrestor cable sort of that will recover the drone and not do so do as much damage as sometimes the net does. Plus, it's also capable of carrying much larger drones. They did it repeatedly with a 400-pound Lockheed Martin Fury, but they want up to 1,320 pounds to recover. So, and this system is going to be either ground deployable or ship deployable.
And this has actually been successfully tested, full-scale tested, done by Aurora Flight Sciences. And the video that we've got as our video of the week shows really kind of a short clip of how that works. They also have some animations that describe more completely how this system could be used. And they show, I think if I remember correctly, David, they show a ship-based version of this that would do just exactly what you described as having happened in the past.
All right, well, let's move on. We also got some feedback from our friend Mike. Well, the Mavic, I always want to say Maverick, but it's the Mavic Pro, is getting floats. We're suddenly getting float plane drones. And he sent us a video of the testing of this float. I haven't quite figured out why we want a floating drone, but I guess amphibious drones are the next wave in drone technology.
Well, I've been thinking about all the people that fly their drones over water, and then because of whatever reason, the drone descends and then it's lost. So how this comes about is our friend Mike here was at the Central Florida Mavic Owners Group. They had a meetup. And one of the guys in the group had put these little, they look like sort of, I don't know, maybe baseball-sized balls on each of the landing legs. What Mike did was he used his Mavic to take pictures of his friend's Mavic with the little floats on there, sort of demonstrating how it works. And thing just, sets right down on the water, takes off, no problems at all, it would seem. So I think it's, kind of a clever idea.
Well, last but not least, my intrepid co-host gave us another piece of technology that he ran across, which is the Retrieve Compact Retrieval Tool. Retrieve Compact Retrieval Tool from Tech Accessories. Now, he put that in there just so it, because it was a mouth, it's going to be a mouthful for me, I'm sure.
This thing is a little tiny grappling hook. And I was actually looking at some other UAV news stories, and this was an ad on the side. And, usually you don't pay too much attention to the ads, but this one looked a little intriguing, so I clicked on it. And what I find is it's just like what I said, it's this little tiny pocket-sized little grappling hook sort of thing. It folds up, and the idea is that it can be used for retrieving, drones from trees. Now, it comes with two different types of arms, right? The four arms that sort of hook on. It's got some steel ones that are strong and don't bend, and then it's got some aluminum ones that I guess the idea there is that if you get the thing stuck up there and you pull on it hard enough, the arms will bend and it'll come down. So for those of you who are prone to getting your drones stuck in trees and want to think about how a little grappling hook on the end of a long string might sort of help bring that thing down safely, you can check it out. I've never actually seen or used one of these things, so I wouldn't consider this to be a personal recommendation by any means. But if
we're not endorsing this product, we have not tried it, but we think it's cool.
Yeah, and you can also find them on Amazon, but we'll have a link to it in the show notes. All right, well, enough of that. I think, David, this is about it for this episode. And as always, we want to thank you very, very much for listening to the UAV Digest. We really love the fact that you enjoy this show. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. And if you want to go right to the show notes for this episode, just visit the UAVDigest.com/182.
And also, while you're there, check out our sponsors. We of course, have a lot of people who are behind the scenes with us, but check out our sponsors and all of the conferences so you go become a droniac nearby. I'm sure we try to keep our list current on that. And if you want to talk drones on a daily basis with a bunch of people who have the same interest with you, you can join our Slack team at the UAVDigest.com/team, or just send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com with your name and an email address, and we'll send you the invite. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAVDigest, on Twitter at UAVDigest. You can leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store, or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. All of those links are available on our show notes. And of course, we want to thank you again for listening to us and being on this ride for 182 episodes. Max and I still can't believe we talk about this almost every beginning of every episode. We can't believe we've gotten to 182 episodes. We're not sure where that time went. So with that, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.